Hi guys, welcome to the second season of Young and Limitless. And my amazing guests today are Graham and Jennifer, and they are from Athena Herd. So a couple of weeks ago, over half term, I did some training with them. I overcame my fear of horses, and I learned how amazing horses and pets are for increasing our well-being. So Graham and Jennifer are going to share some tips and techniques for how we can be with our pets and how they can help us to reduce stress, anxiety, to have somebody who can teach us unconditional love and compassion. I call them somebody, but the pets, you know. So they are from Athena Herd. Athena Herd is a place where horses and alpacas can roam naturally. So they are able to eat when they want, and they go in and come out of like barns when they want. So they're free, completely free. So as they are in the best place for them, when people go and visit them, they benefit from the well-being of being with animals which are healthy and happy and whole. So guys, enjoy listening to what Jennifer and Graham have to say.
So hi guys again.
Hi there, Esther. Nice to see you again.
Hi, Esther.
So how old were you when you first had your first pets?
Yeah, so gosh, we had a little Yorkshire Terrier, I think, as a family member while I was growing up. So a very young age.
So we have a family myth that there were boxes in the house when I was born, although I never remember them. But I selected a German Shepherd when I was about 6 or 7. I really wanted a German Shepherd.
What did you call him?
Her, and she was called, my father named her because that's what happened in our house, and she was called Spry.
Oh, so how long did you have her for?
Sorry?
How long did you have her for?
She lasted a long time for a German Shepherd, actually, so I think she was about 14, I think, when she passed away, bless her.
So you grew up with her?
Yeah.
Both of you grew up with dogs?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, definitely. We have a little boy, Thomas is 8, and we had dogs before he was born, so he's very much grown up with dogs, cats, and all of the other animals pretty much since birth as well. So, yeah, definitely very animal people, aren't we, Graham?
Definitely.
So you started off loving animals as pets, and now you work. Tell us more about where you work.
So essentially the home base is Jennifer's home as well, which is Athena Herd, which is just outside Paddock Wood in Kent. And so basically, I mean, Jennifer will tell you about her horses in a second, but I work with her here providing training for people who want to learn essentially the same skills and develop the skills that you experienced at Elysian a couple of weeks ago around equine facilitated learning. And my horse lives here as well, my horse Ernie.
Okay.
So yeah, so as Graham said, we're now called Athena Herd. We've been at this property for around 6 years now, but our journey, it has very much been a lifestyle journey. It was really driven by our animals. It's quite interesting because we had two cats and we lived in central London, and myself and my husband at that point decided that, you know, we wanted the best for our two cats. So we basically moved home every year with every animal addition, and that led to being here where we are now when we started to acquire horses. So we got 2.5 horses, a half being a Falabella, which is a miniature horse from Argentina. And, you know, it was really tricky for us managing that work and lifestyle balance and looking after our animals, really. So that's why we moved here. We've got 17 acres, which is quite a decent size amount of land. And we just love being around the animals. And I'm sure we're going to get into that a little bit later. But what's really interesting is our journey has really been focused on the health and well-being of the animals, particularly the horses, which is really why we work quite a lot in the equine facilitated learning space.
Ooh. So you've mentioned cats and dogs and horses. So for the young people and their families listening, they probably They might have a horse, but they've probably got a cat and a dog or a bird, you know, anything they can stroke, maybe not a fish. So how can you adapt what you taught me last couple of weeks ago so they can benefit from being around their cat or their dog?
Yeah. So I think the benefit of being around animals, first of all, comes simply, there are many fold, but I think that the easy way in is the non-judgmental relationship that goes on. Mm-hmm. So there are things that essentially interactively are permissible, if you like, between a human and an animal, that when the same thing comes to us from another human being, we tend to judge it, or we tend to take it personally, or we tend to feel a bit territorial about something. Whereas with an animal, we're much more relaxed about stuff. Animals give us an opportunity to reach out and care for something. So when we are looking after and when we are nurturing our pets, there's something about connecting with the best possible version of ourselves. There's a lot of compassion in that space with which you reach out to us. So what the time we spend with our animals gives us is positive emotion.
So I read somewhere that when you stroke a cat or dog or a horse, it can like lower your blood pressure and your stress hormones. And because you taught me how to hug a horse, and I was like, I was so scared of them. And I just thought, oh, as I relax, the horse relaxed. Yeah. And then I relaxed more. Yeah. And then I just call it horse sedation. It was just like, I was so relaxed. So can you do that with a dog or cat?
I mean, a big thing. So what actually happens? So one of the things that happens when we touch each other as human beings, you know, from the moment that a mother touches her baby, it produces oxytocin in the mother and it produces oxytocin in the baby. And it's that oxytocin which creates the bond. Otherwise we'd be more defensive with each other, but that oxytocin reduces the conflicts. This is why you feel that stress level reduce.
Okay.
When you stroke your pets or when you go hug a horse or something like that. And so what happens is you get this natural lowering. The oxytocin will take stress hormones out of the body, so you get just a general relaxing and a calming of the body. And then as I think we did with you at Elysium, is that we really basically said, okay, actually just connect with the feeling. Don't think about the horse. What does it feel like? What does its fur feel like? What does its hair coat feel like? And just using touch is a simple way to connect, or to busy the mind to stop it worrying about this giant horse. And then as you focus, you let go of some of that stress, that some of that anxiety. And then as you actually touch, the natural reaction of touch kicks in as well. So it is a little bit like you described. First, you feel yourself calm down because you stop worrying because you're thinking about what it feels like. And then you relax again because you get that oxytocin that comes from the touch and the bond of connection.
Lovely, because unfortunately we're in the second lockdown, people can't touch, young people can't, you know, all their hugs and all the normal interactions. But a cat, a dog, a pet is just happy, and we could, you know, we can hug them as much as we want and have that. Just you're right, it's not even thinking too much, it's just a, it looks like nothing, doesn't it? It's like the simplest act in the world, but it's so deep and powerful.
You know, if you're sitting at home in the evening and you're stroking your cat on your lap, you're not thinking about that meeting you've got to do tomorrow. You're not thinking about that essay you've got to get up early and write. You're just thinking about how nice it is to stroke the cat.
So with kids with special needs or mental health challenges, then stroking an animal is like a double benefit, like you said. So not only do you calm down, but you get the release of the nice oxytocin. So are there any other benefits?
I think the other one is what we all call the self-regulation, and obviously that is just really simply controlling one's behavior, emotions and thoughts. And you know, then we sort of get into the realms of the emotional self-regulation. So that helps us to just manage our stress, to manage our anxiety, And really that is quite important as well when we're thinking about our animals. And just, you know, really simplistically, I think when I talked about as a family, our lifestyle choice, my husband's from South Africa, he was in the South African Army, and myself, I work, you know, I've worked in London, quite stressful environment. So, you know, we almost didn't realise that our lifestyle choice being around animals was just really helping us as a family to self-regulate, to help bring us down sometimes from our stressful lives, our anxiety, our worries. And that's almost become a lifestyle choice for us as a family. So, you know, just having an immersion in animals, you know, just really helps with that. So I can see why it's so beneficial for some of the children, and particularly the children that you guys work with at Elysian.
Yeah, so it's what's really nice is that you taught us to just wait for the animal to come to us. And I think that when you're at home, that often happens in the cats and dogs. Our pets know that when we are feeling stressed, anxious, or just, you know, we're not in the happiest state we could be. And they are very good at cuddling and nuzzling and like helping us to be in the moment. It's okay.
Yeah.
They're very intuitive, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're social. I think the thing that we forget is that our cats and our dogs are social animals, as are our horses, and they are used to company.
Okay.
You know, so particularly with something like a horse on its own is a horse threatened.
Oh.
You know, a big part of a horse's safety routine is what it gathers. Or what it gains from being as part of a herd. Wow. So it's really, and so animals, we don't give animals the credit they deserve for their sentience and their awareness of where they are.
Yeah, I think you're right, because so there's loads of studies where dogs have managed to pick up people's before they have an epileptic fit or heart attack and stuff like that. So yeah, we don't. How can we value our animals some more then? How can we treat them, you know, in the best way?
Yeah, I think it depends obviously on their environment, but really for me it's about making sure that their needs are met. You know, we're all really good at, you know, maybe picking an animal up and hugging it, but maybe it just doesn't want that hug right now, you know. So it's just recognizing that they're a living being themselves, as Graham said, a sentient being. And yes, you know, they give us a lot and they can be very loyal and often want to sit on our laps. Not always the horses, but some of my horses actually would love to sit on your lap, which is always quite interesting.
You wouldn't have a lap off.
But it's just about recognizing their need for, you know, their need for food, their need for rest, their need for sleep, you know, and just really being respectful, I think, as well, of their needs. I think for me, that's the big takeaway.
So how would you, so when you were younger, like, did you tell, because I think most people do this, I definitely did this, my sister did this, so we talked to our pets, they were our confidant, we told them everything in the world. So did you guys do the same?
I'm sure that's why I wanted it. I'm sure that when I chose the dog that I had, it was certainly an aspiration to have a confidant. I mean, I was an only child as well, so actually I really needed someone. I can't actually remember telling the dog anything.
No.
But I suspect I probably did. Yeah. I suspect I probably did.
Because when you're young, you're playing is really important, isn't it? Playing with an animal and just having fun, just for fun's sake. And
it's like we were saying, what happens when you're with your pet? And when you're with your pet is we engage with the best version of ourselves. It's that positive, it's that we're connecting with the social resources, the compassionate resources that we carry within us. And I think that's really important, because as people, particularly, you know, if we're brought up in a troubled environment or a challenging environment, we don't get that affection, we don't get that space without judgment, we don't get that compassion from others. So being able to share that with an animal helps us to gain some of the resources that we will, or access some of the resources that sometimes human contact doesn't afford us.
So did you talk to your pets and your little Jennifer? I don't know, maybe it's a girl thing then.
I talk to them quite a lot now, actually. I think one day I went out, I was talking to the horses, and Graham thought I was talking to him. No, I do talk to them, but actually it's more, rather than a confidant, I would say it's more of a sort of conversation. How are you doing?
I think it's because there's a herd, and there's how many now?
15
now. There's 15 now living together.
Horses,
is it? And when you're basically, obviously we have to clear, we have, you know, we have to clear up after them. You know what animals are like. Jesus. Bless them. So they're all living together. You're always having to walk around in between them with hay bales and or a poop scoop or whatever it is, and you do tend to just idly chat away to them in the same way that you would idly chat away to someone that you were working with.
And as a family now, we have Malamutes. We had five dogs, we're down to three. And actually Malamutes are very, very vocal and very misunderstood dogs, and ours all the time comes over and is like woof woof woof, you know, at us, to the point that we're opening the door, shutting the door, letting her in, letting her out. You know, she wants to come and sleep upstairs, but she's quite old, one of them's quite old now, so she struggles to get up and down the stairs, so we're having to help her up and down the stairs. So, you know, there's always an element of conversation, I would say, with our animals, and we do try as a family to meet their needs, even though they're not able to say, this is what I want. You get a lot of feedback, a lot of verbalization, but in their own way. So I guess in a way we're trying to do our best to interpret what it is they're asking from us. And I'm not necessarily saying we always get that right, but we're having a good guess, you know.
I think there's something really important. So I have a cat who's really, for a cat, is unbelievably vocal. So she will always communicate when she comes in. She'll always let you know she's walking into the room. She'll always, she's very vocal for a cat. Anyway, the key bit is, and I think one of the things, and it just crossed my mind as Jennifer was talking, is that I think one of the things that our pets really appreciate from us is being heard.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, there's the fact that they know they've got a voice, and they know that if they come and ask for something, if they come and seek something, that someone will go, okay, what is it you want, rather than go away, or I'm watching telly now, or whatever that is. And I think there is, and I think, you know, people. If you just think about people, you know, just people to people, person to person sort of thing. If a person's not going to listen to us, we stop talking. And so I think the fact that our pets choose to vocalise with us, choose to engage and actively seek things from us, is an acknowledgement as well that they know that they're being heard.
Yeah.
And so, you know, in terms you said about what can we give our pets, one of the things we can give our pets is the acknowledgement that they're being heard. I think that's really important for a social being's psychology.
And I love that, because that's what young people and children want too. So they can give it and they can receive it. And it's very neutral then, isn't it?
It was a bit like that mantra, I think, as well, with that we did while we were at Elysian. And I must say, I most days look at my horses and even my dog and I say, yeah, I see you. What can I do for you? How are you today? So I do generally make a point of telling our animals every day that I see them.
Yeah,
and I'm listening.
So we see them. We're acknowledging that we are also seen, because they're non-verbally telling us they see us too, aren't they?
One of the reasons that we do that little exercise that we did with it is it's based upon essentially the Buddhist practice of metta, which is loving kindness, and it's a simple act of compassion, of sharing, not just sharing acknowledgement of someone's being, but wishing well for someone. And one of the really powerful things about that as an interaction is that not only does it make us feel good about, you know, we feel good because we're sharing, being kind to somebody, but what you learn as a practice, as you do that more and more, is that you learn to see discomfort and suffering in others. Mm. So it's really powerful that you can start to see sometimes other people's behaviour not as antisocial, but as an expression of discomfort.
Yeah, I love that. Growing compassion and understanding.
Yeah. And animals are much easier to learn compassion. It's really hard to be compassionate with other human beings, particularly the ones we find challenging. But it's really easy to do it with animals, horses, yeah, and our pets. And so really, the more we can encourage people to work with their pets and share compassion with their pets, it's helping them to build the skills. It's no different to learning to play the piano, or it's no different to learning to run a race. We're just exercising the compassion muscle.
I remember being a little girl and playing with a cat and my mum telling me to come. You know, it was a waste of time, but it sounds like it's never a waste of time to pet an animal and to communicate with an animal. And it's sometimes as parents, you know, it doesn't get valued, but child sitting and quietly, you know, connecting and learning. One of the things we did as a lesson was grounding. So I think when a child or anybody plays with an animal, you are somehow, you're automatically, that's happening. Can you tell us more about that?
Grounding, do you mean generally? So I mean, that can be done in different ways, but obviously the idea really is that we're all so task driven, you know, let's do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that. And I think, you know, I'm sure Graham can add a bit to this, but for me, grounding is just really trying to say, just notice where you are today, just notice that it's raining, that it's windy, that, you know, we're not just engrossed in that text or that Facebook message. Mm-hmm. And it's just getting us out of our heads and back into almost nature, the environment, the what's going on for us in that moment, and just noticing, are we cold, are we hot, are we hungry? Mm-hmm. And that can really help us to just come out of our heads and be more aware about ourselves. And it can bring, you know, it can be quite a calming effect on us as well, which then helps us to move back into that self-regulation space that we were talking about earlier. I don't know, Graham, if you've got anything.
Grounding is really, it's really important. It's that quietening. It's that quietening of our existence in that moment. It's that, you know, it's the energy. So it's interesting. I was talking to someone while we were outside this morning. One of the things I remember when we were in the field at Elysium, mm-hmm, was being one of the horses who was not particularly that overly comfortable around being with men, but he was standing next to me. And I think I was with you.
Yes.
So I think I was with you, Esther. And what was really interesting was that when I just stood with him, he relaxed. But every time I raised my energy to talk to you, he raised his energy and nipped my shoulder.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting. But then I would drop my energy and he would drop again. Mm. So I think we don't acknowledge how much of our energy pollutes the world around us. Mm. And we think as human beings that we don't really connect with it, you know, maybe just animals are sensitive, but as human beings we're sensitive as well. And so I think it's about just being able to acknowledge this idea that there is an energy that we create around us, however you want to define that. It's not about being woo-woo, it's not about being weird about that. But there is, you know, we know that our emotional states are contagious. We know that empathy exists between people. We know we can drop or low our focus or our energy at given times. So I think it's just about recognizing, and there's every emotion that we experience is valid and appropriate, and there is a time for it. But it's also about being able to step out of that.
Yeah.
And what grounding, like people who might do mindfulness or something like that, what the grounding exercise does is give you an opportunity to step out of the emotion. And that sometimes stepping out of the emotion is how we stop conflict happening, or how we stop things escalating.
Yeah. For me, it's a very quick way to change my state of being, because, uh-huh, So when I had the horse, it was just like magic. I don't know how else to describe it, other than it was, I didn't have to do anything. It's not about me doing anything at all. That the sense of being, and I think very much in the West, we are so like you said, task-driven, Jennifer, we're all in our head, that we disconnect from the body, mm-hmm. and we just like, it's, mm-hmm. so yeah, people call it centering. There's lots of different words for it.
Yeah.
But it's nice to know that young people can do that in their house or in the garden, you know, nobody needs to know what's happening, and it just helps, like, increases their well-being exponentially, doesn't it? Without any money.
Again, it really does improve their well-being, because in that moment, again, it's you're letting the stress hormones out of your body. You're letting those stress hormones fade away, and the stress hormones don't do us when they're held onto and when they're sustained, don't do good things to our body.
No. But people could say, like, mindfulness or meditation, and those practices can be quite hard, and you have to be disciplined and blah, blah. But stroking an animal, hugging an animal, is just like, it's quite instinctive, isn't it? It's easy. There's no, you don't have to focus too much. You just have to relax and be.
And it's just giving us that pause almost, you know, it's that pause from, you know, social media, that pause from all those life challenges that we're in the middle of, you know, and almost helps us to reset a little bit, you know, and it can be the shift from actually getting on with somebody to having an argument with somebody, or, you know, just, and again, we're back to that sort of self-regulation. It really can help us with that.
Yeah, I think based on this, everybody should have a pet or two. And also, what about schools? Because they're classroom pets.
I think again, this is something I'm quite passionate about, because obviously I think it's an excellent idea. It's a great idea. You know, people are not fortunate enough to maybe have a pet at home. And I understand that, because, you know, they're quite a big responsibility. But I think my concern is always about the animal's needs being met, the pet's needs being met, or the classroom pet being needs being met. Because, you know, I mean, I'm guessing, you know, to have, I guess it depends how big your classroom is, but, you know, potentially have quite a sizable group of maybe quite high energy children in a room all day, that could be quite a lot for the animal. So I, you know, I'm not saying I'm against it, but I think it's really important just to make sure the environment where the animal is, and maybe how much contact that animal does get with the children is well managed, just to make sure that both the animal's needs are met and the, you know, and obviously the children's needs are met. You know, it's a bit like, I remember as a child, I'm a little bit the same as my little boy. We've got a cat who my little boy loves dearly. And, you know, sometimes I have to say to him, just pop her down and let her have a break, you know, let her get some quiet time. You know, you know, sometimes just hugging and holding on to this animal all the time, it's great for my child, but maybe not quite so great for my, for the cat, you know. So it's just getting that balance, isn't it, about, you know, we all want our cuddles, but sometimes it's also nice to have that downtime and that rest time. So I think it's about that balance for me, really. I don't know.
I think there's also something to think about. Again, it just it was bubbling through my mind as Jennifer was talking. I think one of the things that's really powerful about our own pets, or the interaction with our own pets, is the intimacy. It's just that moment, you know, when you're at home with a dog or your cat or wherever it is, you're usually in, for want of better description, a safe place.
Yeah.
It's a place where you can feel comfortable to let your guard down. Not every child is going to feel comfortable to let its guard down in the classroom or in front of their peers. And so suddenly it just becomes an act of passing an animal between somebody's hands to another hands. And I think it's, I don't quite know how to explain it, but I think it's about the interaction with the animal has to be meaningful. What the young people learn is to care for another being.
Yeah.
And that's, again, is really powerful, because it's getting them, it's stepping them outside of their own challenges, outside of their own issues.
And maybe it's less about the handling, so maybe we don't need to handle the animal so much in that space. It's more about the caregiving and the meeting of the animals, like husbandry, basic needs.
You know, I think it's worth thinking about. I think we need to handle.
Yeah.
But does the animal need to be handled?
Okay. Yes. Mm. Yes. It's what the needs are. Whose needs are we meeting?
Yeah. Exactly.
So I have a last question, potentially last question. So if you could go back in time and tell, knowing what you know now, and tell your younger self, say a 14-year-old self, one piece of advice, what would you say to your younger self? Could be regarding animals, doesn't have to be.
No, I'm useless. Let me, what have you got to say, bro?
Okay. there's two things. A, learn to emotionally regulate. Learn to manage my emotions. And maybe maybe what I really mean by that is manage my temper. But the other thing that I did want to say is trust my intuition.
Big thing. Not taught that. Nowhere are we taught that.
No, and I would reflect, I can reflect back on more years than I care to mention and know where my intuition has given me some incredible insight. And in some cases I've gone with it, in some cases I've ignored it. Okay. So yeah.
I can probably echo that actually. I think the self-regulation is really important. I think it's really interesting, isn't it? Because my husband's quite low energy and I'm actually very high energy. And actually he's brought a lot of self-regulation almost into my life, because, you know, in the evenings I'd be like, oh, let's just paint this room, you know? And he's like, no. And so, you know, he's definitely helped me to lower my energy. And it's quite interesting. We always joke about this, don't we, Graham? That nearly all my animals are high energy. I just bought another horse recently, and she's again very high energy. And so my animals teach me I have to lower my energy to get them to be, you know, calmer and more focused and less panicky about things. So I think self-regulation, I've definitely learned a lot over my lifetime, and the animals, particularly the horses, have really taught me that. Intuition, I think I've always had a really good sense of intuition. I guess we're all guilty of their head overpowering the intuition, isn't it? It's that, particularly because in my day job, I'm a lawyer, so it's all about managing risk, and it's all about, you know, thinking in your head and problem solving in your head. So I guess it's always going to be an element of intuition and, you know, what is my head telling me to balance that out? And trusting the process.
I had one.
Yeah, for me or for you?
That actually, I realised there was one thing that I learned, and it was when I started on my journey in equine facilitated learning and coaching and all of those things. And in various bits of training that I did, one phrase, one sentence came up, and it was, everybody's actions come from a place of positive intention.
Nobody deliberately sets out to mess you up or to
and so no one sentence changed how I interact. No one sentence has changed how I interact with people more than that sentence, because I always then suddenly found myself going, so why are they doing that, rather than reacting to it.
And I think, yeah, exactly. And I think to add to that, I think what I've realised over the years is that it's often just about what's going on for them. It has absolutely nothing to do with us. you know, if you take the example of you driving to the supermarket and somebody just beeps at you because, I don't know, you've looked the wrong way, or, you know, or they're just in a rush. It's about what's going on for them. It's their fear. It's about their need to get to where they need to be quicker because they're running late. So I think for me, you know, I've really, as I've been doing this work with the horses and mainly with the horses, I've really started to realize it's not necessarily just about what is going on for us, it's actually what's going on for the other people, and then they react in a way that is that is known to them. You know, it's about what is going on for them. It could just be they've had a bad morning and you're just in that space. So I think I think definitely the work that we do with the animals in the, you know, the assisted learning space, that really helps us to start recognizing these things, which almost helps us to self-regulate better, because, you know, we know that it's not necessarily about something we've done. It could just be we've done something in the space that connects with what's going on for them at that moment in time. I was just conscious of, we haven't maybe really explained what equine facilitated learning is. I don't know if that would be really helpful, Esther, for your listeners. Graham can do it much more succinctly than myself.
Equine facilitated, let's just say equine facilitated interactions, and what that mean can be learning, as in sort of coaching-y type sort of things, personal development sort of things, but it can also mean direct therapy and therapeutic interventions and healing interventions. What that means is that we basically create a space, where there are horses alongside, or there are humans alongside horses. Sometimes they're just together and sharing that space. Sometimes they may be undertaking some sort of activity together. But what that interaction is all about is an experiential insight for the person who is, or the human being in that space, such that the human being gets in a comfortable way, find out something about themselves or learn something about themselves. But then, more importantly, get in one way or another to model difference or model change. And if we are going to change, and if we are going to learn, or if we are going to move forward out of problems, we have to know that it's safe to do so. And that space that we get with horses allows us to model that change safely.
Mm. And see immediate feedback. The feedback's so quick, isn't it?
And I mean, that doesn't necessarily have to be with horses. We have alpacas here on site. You know, you do get a lot of people doing what they, rather than equine facilitated learning or assisted learning, they call it animal assisted learning. So it doesn't necessarily have to be with horses. It can be with other animals as well, which is why I think this the work that you're doing here, Esther, is really important, because, you know, it shows it shows the value in even just having your own animal at home, or working with animals in, you know, in the school space. I think, you know, it just shows how it can be transferred from, you know, the learning that we get, whether it be working with horses or whether it just be the learning or the self-regulation that we've talked about that we get from just owning and caring for an animal.
So our time is drawing to an end, but I've absolutely loved our conversation. So thank you. And appreciate your time and your conversation. So bye, guys. Thank you for listening.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.